Oh, yeah, it's Independence Day, a fitting time to remember our history. And hey, how did we get here anyway? It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And let's pause for a civics lessons. Drafting the Declaration of Independence, 1776, became the defining event in Thomas Jefferson's life. We're examining what was going on when the Declaration of Independence was approved by Congress in 1776, and we'll take in all the fascinating side stories leading up to this moment. What is your favorite piece of 4th of July history? How do you reconcile the past behaviors of our founding fathers and what we celebrate today? We're at 800-642-1234. Kenneth C. Davis is author of Don't Know Much About History and Don't Know Much About the American Presidents, among many other titles, and his website is don'tknowmuch.com. Ken, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. It is a great pleasure to be with you, and happy birthday, America.
Indeed.
Well, sort of.
Well, and that's the thing, sort of, and I want to get to that sort of point. When people think about the 4th of July, they think about it being the day when we signed the Declaration of Independence, but apparently that's not so correct, is it?
Well, first of all, John Adams thought we would be celebrating 2 days ago, July 2nd. That was the date on which Congress actually voted in favor of a resolution of independence. Adams went home that night and wrote a letter to his lovely wife, Abigail, back in Massachusetts, saying this will be a day that will go down as the great feast day, and we'll have parades and bonfires and church bells tolling and illuminations, by which he meant kind of fireworks. And he was just off by 2 days because it was on July 4th, after debating Jefferson's draft declaration for most of those 2 days, that Congress adopts, not signs, the Declaration of Independence. It was a vote. The document that was ready that day was Jefferson's handwritten draft, which had been scratched over and crossed out, a few words changed, a few words added, and a large paragraph taken out. So it's really that then it becomes it fixed in the American mind as the nation's birthday because of those words on July 4th, 1776, these United States of America, the first time that that phrase is used in a formal sense.
So between July 2nd and July 4th, in those 48 hours, what kind of debates were happening? What was going down behind closed doors?
Well, Jefferson, like all writers, speaking as one, didn't take kindly to being edited. He thought what he had written was pretty fine. He had actually drafted this over the course of several weeks, working on a portable desk of his own design, a wooden desk that he kept on basically on his knees. You could call it the original laptop. It is at the Smithsonian, and one can see it if they wish to find Jefferson's writing desk. So he drafted this. He showed it to John Adams and Benjamin Franklin. They were two of the other five members of the committee that was supposed to draft this document, which was simply meant to explain why America was taking this rather extraordinary step and declaring itself independent. Jefferson's words were changed a little bit by Franklin and Adams. They made a few suggestions. Most famously, Franklin suggested that Jefferson change the words life, liberty, and the pursuit of property to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and I think we're all happy that he did. Then the Congress put its hands on it. They made a lot of changes, little word changes here and there, the addition of more references to a deity than Jefferson might have chosen, but he went along with that. But the biggest change was actually the most controversial in a sense, and it's the one we still have to focus on. Jefferson had written a paragraph that really excoriated slavery. Mm. Of course, ironic, coming from a slaveholder. Mm-hmm. And he blames the King of England for the slave trade and says the king is trying to prevent Americans from stopping the slave trade, which was actually not true, but this was a piece of propaganda as well as a piece of political philosophy. Congress took this out. Jefferson later says it was taken out in deference to those men who owned slaves, as well as those who were making a great deal of money transporting them. And, you know, this is the dark side of the story that we must come back to, that the nation that was conceived in liberty was also born in shackles. shackles, because 41 of the 56 signers at least were either slaveholders themselves or participated in the slave trade. And that is the original sin of American history. And so we're trying to find a way to balance out what we celebrate with the reality of what slavery meant for 400 years in this country.
We're talking with Ken Davis, the author of Don't Know Much About History and Don't Know Much About the American Presidents, among other titles. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's a misconception you previously had about the 4th of July that you came to realize was completely false later on? What do you wish kids were learning in school about this history? You can call in or email ideas at WPR.org. Ken Davis, on this topic of slavery and knowing that 41 of 56 of these founding fathers had some element, some connection to slave trade, how long has it taken for us to really fully understand that connection and what connection these founding fathers had to slavery?
I think, unfortunately, we still don't understand that this is the hard history of our country. It's not well taught. People do have a sense, I believe, a great many people, that slavery is something that happened in one part of the country and not in the rest, and that it was a kind of sideshow to the proud pageant that we celebrate on the 4th of July. But we have to acknowledge that since 1619, that's 400 years ago, when the first Africans taken from Africa were sold into servitude in Jamestown, Virginia, this was part of the foundation of the nation, and certainly part of the foundation of the republic. It's written into the Constitution. It affected every aspect of American society, culture, and politics for most of those early years, and of course, ultimately leads to the Civil War, the great tragedy in our history. So I don't think we fully come to terms with it in many ways. I think the recent flare-up when there was a congressional hearing just about establishing a commission to talk about reparations for slavery speaks to the kind of desire to wish this away and wish this didn't happen, but it did, and it continues to affect our politics and our society. So I think, you know, we can celebrate this day as this extraordinary birth of freedom and liberty and independence and the idea that we are all created equal and we have the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, but we still have work to do. And I think that that's an important thing. Look, democracy is under assault around the world in many places, and it's also eroded somewhat in our country. Democracy does not die in darkness. It often dies in broad daylight. And one of the things we must do is really understand our past and understand the sacrifices and the rights and responsibilities that come with that history.
Ken, when we look at those words, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, why did property get changed to happiness? And what's going on in Britain at this time and around property?
Well, it's an important word in 1776, because certainly when John Locke, who used the phrase or made the phrase most famous, an English Enlightenment philosopher who many of the founding fathers read a great deal, he talked about natural rights and the rights of man. Locke talks about property, and he's talking about it more in the sense that people would understand it generally, that most people in the European world at that time could own no property of their own. Most of the property belonged either to the king and the nobility or to the church. That was one of the reasons that so many people did start to come to America in the great immigration that followed for all those years. But by the time Thomas Jefferson writes the Declaration of Independence, property in America had a different connotation. And to many people at the time, property meant human property. Mm-hmm. And so that was certainly one of the reasons that Franklin suggests the change to happiness. I think it was also a sense of lifting the ideas to something higher. Now, Jefferson isn't writing happiness in the sense that, you know, we get from a puppy and good feeling, but a sense that a human being had the right to be happy in his life or her life, although Jefferson certainly wouldn't have thought about women too much in that respect. So it was an important idea and one of the radical ideas in the Declaration. You know, we sort of do take this for granted. We've grown up with it. We've said these words and heard these words for as Americans for more than 200 years now. But it was radical when Thomas Jefferson wrote these words. It was radical because the king was the most powerful. The King of England was the most powerful man, certainly in the Western world, the European world. And to say that every man was equal was an astonishing idea.
Radical.
It was radical. But I think that the most radical thing he said and wrote was that governments can only govern with the consent of the governed. Again, an idea we kind of take for granted is the essence of democracy, in a sense, representative democracy, that we must give our consent to the government. And that, more than anything, I think, really changed how people viewed their role in who was in charge of their lives. And that's why the Declaration stands today as not only an important document for Americans, but for people around the world.
Ken Davis, our guide through history, author of Don't Know Much About History and other titles. What questions do you have for our resident historian about the 4th of July and what happened in Philadelphia those 243 years ago? Where do these notions of national and self-determination come from? What was going through Thomas Jefferson's head? Ken has a hunch. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're celebrating the birth of our nation and asking, how did we get here? It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Celebrating the Declaration of Independence on July 4th is an American tradition, but what did the Founding Fathers actually have in for this fragile nation? On what issues did the founders most agree on? And what became of the 56 men who signed the Declaration? We're getting answers to these questions going inside the stories. Many other ones on your mind. Join in at 800-642-1234. Ken Davis is the author of Don't Know Much About, Fill in the Blank series, lots to do with history and presidents, and he stays with us for this look back 243 years ago. Ken, we were talking about these radical ideas and what the Founding Fathers had in mind in forming our country. Where did these notions of national self-determination really come from? What are their roots?
Well, there had been other republics throughout history, of course, and the Founding Fathers would always point to Rome, the Roman Republic, as their great model. And in fact, many of them would often trot around in togas, and they believed Cicero was the great Cicero and Cato and those who fought against Julius Caesar when he tried to bring down the Republic. So these were ideas that were around for a long time in Western civilization, but certainly the Renaissance leading to the Enlightenment, this period where all basic questions that had been accepted for centuries in Europe were under a fire. Science was coming to the fore. The view of the universe had changed. And so people were really thinking differently about people's place, mankind's place in that universe. And this period of enlightenment is incredibly important in shaping the views and the ideas of the founders, the idea that there were natural rights, questioning the divine monarchy. So this is a powerful moment in human history that culminates with Jefferson and other enlightenment philosophers, Franklin certainly among them, a man like Thomas Paine, Paine, an Englishman who comes to America and writes first Common Sense and then other pamphlets supporting the idea of a revolution. And of course, the English experiment that had been very slow in moving towards the power of Parliament being closer to an equal to the king. It certainly wasn't there yet in 1776, but this was a long, slow evolution, and Jefferson brings it to a complete fruition. But of course, again, we always have to balance it against this problem that we have, that this is a man who kept people as property, as Washington and 41 of the other signers of the Declaration did, and many other Americans.
Immigration has been a real through line through our nation's history, and tensions certainly running high on immigration today. How did the Founding Fathers think about immigrants coming to make a life here?
Well, it's an interesting question because we've always had this kind of dual view of immigrants, which is that the country was born of immigrants coming here for opportunity and in some cases religious freedom. But the facts don't always bear that out. You go back to 1750, before there was a United States of America, and one of the most famous founders in our history is worried about the immigrants coming into his state, his colony of Pennsylvania, colony at the time. He's worried because they speak their own language. They have the street signs and their business signs are in their language. They don't teach their children English. And he's worried about Germans. And this is Benjamin Franklin. So this fear that this wave of immigrants coming into the country and they would overwhelm the government and overwhelm the processes that have been set up really predates and precedes the actual establishment of the country. The Continental Army is largely composed of recent immigrants, recent arrivals. There were many groups of soldiers in Washington's army who didn't speak English, primarily Germans and other Europeans. So this is the part of our history. We celebrate this idea of the melting pot, but it hasn't always been true. Once the country is established, of course, one of the first things that's passed is an Alien and Sedition Act that really sets the terms of who can come to the country and how long it will take to become a citizen. And every generation has thrown up its own version of Franklin's Germans. First, it was the French who were dangerous because they were all radicals and they were going to overthrow the government. And then it was the Irish because they were dirty, diseased, dangerous criminals who didn't speak the language. They were ignorant. They were bringing disease. And worst of all, they were Catholic, because that's part of the story here as well. There was tremendous antipathy towards Catholics in this country for much of our early history. Of course, everyone knows that John F. Kennedy was the first Roman Catholic president elected in 1960, but that doesn't speak to how really violent and vicious the attacks on Catholics were in this country for centuries before we got to that point. So all of the what we can talk about immigration and hold up as, you know, the proud history really doesn't bear out with what happens on the ground in our past. I had the experience the other day of going to the Statue of Liberty and to Ellis Island.
Nice.
And
yes.
Every American, I mean, it's such a remarkable and thrilling experience. Really advocate, if you come to New York, you must spend a few hours to go to these two places. First of all, most people don't realize that the Statue of Liberty is about liberty. At her feet are chains. She was given to the United States by France in honor of not immigration, but in honor of emancipation and the end of slavery. And that sort of narrative got written out of the Statue of Liberty's iconic image as welcoming foreigners. It was really built as a monument to liberty and the end of slavery in America.
When you see the Statue of Liberty today, does it give you the same feelings as when you saw it for the very first time?
For me personally,
yeah.
I get chills. We were with a park ranger, actually, as we were walking around, and at the backside of the Liberty, you look up, and there's this towering figure, and I said to him, I don't know if he lives, works there every day, and he said, I don't... I said to him, I don't know if you get tired of it, but I get chills just being here. And he said, no, it's the same for me every day I come to work. It is an extraordinary icon. But as I said, many people are not aware of the history of the statue and its central role. It's called Liberty Enlightening the World.
Ken, I want to stop right there for just a moment because Gary in Boscobel would like to join us. Gary, hi.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Your guest has touched a little bit on slavery and a little bit on the violence used against Catholics and others. And I can't ever help not thinking about the Native Americans. And when Jefferson and the other founders structured that Declaration of Independence, in a way it was a death knell for about 10 million Native Americans that lived here.
Those that weren't
killed were put on reservations and are still on reservations and living in poverty today.
Gary, thank you so much for the call. Ken, short on time, just a few words on Native Americans.
Well, Jefferson wrote them into the Declaration, and I can quote it here. He said, because he complained about the king, he has excited domestic insurrection amongst us and endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages. Those are the words Jefferson uses to refer to Native Americans, and that was the view at the time. Just on the immigration question as well, because this is also in the Declaration, one of those parts that most Americans never read, he has endeavored, and that's again the king, this is a large list of charges against the king, he has endeavored to prevent the population of these states for that purpose, obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migration. So Jefferson was pro-immigration. The Declaration is a document about immigration.
Ken Davis, author of Don't Know Much About History, other titles as well. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.